Hi, I'm Aries.
And this is Playboy Revisited.
Today's recipe to get you a little not sober is just smoke a bunch of cigarettes, get lung cancer, just end your life by chain smoking a bunch of cigarettes. No alcohol today. We're trying to be a little bit responsible. So just smoke a whole pack.
Do you have
being any American.
Specific cigarette recommendations based on this August 1968 issue?
Yeah, the cigarettes I recommend is Pall Mall. It's the quickest way to get lung cancer, and it's the coolest way to get lung cancer.
Awesome. So today we'll be talking about the August 1968 issue of Playboy. Specifically, we'll be talking about an article from the issue. This article is called Gut Smut, and it's written by William Iverson. But before we jump into our main article today, I just wanted to start with a couple of questions for you, Aries.
Please.
This person writes into the magazine asking about advertisements that are coded as swinger advertisements in their local newspaper.
Okay.
But this person is a little inexperienced, so there's some terms in these advertisements that they don't recognize, and they're asking Playboy for definitions.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and ask you for those definitions.
Gotcha.
And if you get them wrong, you have to, I guess, smoke a cigarette.
Sure. Okay, disclaimer, I've never been in a swinger party, so I will try my best. If there's any older white couples that would, like, let me in there, let me know.
I think you need, like, significant other in order to be in a swinger relationship, so that I don't know that that's going to work for you. No. All right, so the first word that I want you to define today within the context of, like, seeing it in an advertisement mm-hmm. is, like, we're a couple who's interested in discipline. And what do you think discipline, like, what is our modern-day synonym?
Submissive, 100%.
Submissive or the whole?
It's a real, like, the guy is a real top energy and the woman is extremely bottom and she lets that man do whatever he wants.
I think it is important that you put that in those gender roles because, you know, 1968, they weren't being much more creative.
Exactly. Back in 1968, a woman couldn't even, like, imagine being the dominant and, like, I don't know, that's the only way I can think of it. The whole swinging thing is, like, throwing me, like, a little fiasco. Like, I can't process it.
You just wish you lived in the 70s.
100%. I wish I could get racially abused even more than I get right now.
You think you could hook up with white people in the 70s?
No, if I even look at a white woman in the 70s, I get arrested and killed.
What about the fact that, like, you're white? How do you feel about that?
Why are you exposing me like this? I'm trying to get a following here.
All right, so discipline, yeah, you're close. I mean, you're basically on the point. It's like sadism and masochism or BDSM. So it's not just being sub or dom, it's both, it's the whole system. So if we're interested in discipline, we're interested in some sort of BDSM.
I don't know, I feel like I'm kind of spot on. I feel like I'm a little spot on though.
Okay. So the second one, I'm sure you don't know how to define this one, water sports.
First of all, don't down me like that. Don't ever down me like that, all right? I'm thinking.
Wait, you don't actually know?
Oh, hold on. I got a couple theories.
But you don't know? You've not heard it before?
Shut the freak
you
up.
You haven't asked for it before?
Shut the freak up. I'm thinking real theories, all right? Hold on. I got a couple theories. First of all, the first one I got is squirting. My second theory is, like, some water play. Some jacuzzi, pool, shower. Type of play.
You're close.
I'm also like I'm calling it back to, like, the BDSM thing, like maybe, like, putting somebody underwater and just
waterboarding them.
Yeah, waterboarding on some mafia on some mafia type of thing.
You're closest with the first one. Water sports is urine piss play.
Yummy, I love it.
Yes.
Okay.
You know who was super into water sports, but also specifically into shitting?
A president, right? President, right?
No.
No. Jesus.
Probably every single president, yeah.
Yeah, because yeah. I'm into it. Who else?
Lou Reed.
I have no clue who
He's
that guy is.
He's a singer of the Velvet Underground, but, like, also a famous singer.
Oh, yeah, that sounds about right.
But he would just, like, unabashedly ask people to, like, shit on glass tables.
Yeah, that's fine, me too.
I'll do it
at a family night at Golden Corral.
What about a boot worshipper?
Oh, okay. I'm thinking real boot worshipping. I'm thinking real Republican, real MAGA, real what Daddy Trump says.
Right. Well, think 1968.
Okay, 1968. Who was the president at the time?
LBJ.
Oh, he was a Democrat, wasn't he? Boot worshipping. I'm thinking you're probably gonna like blind follow any like military or authority type of person. If you're a cop, if you're a political person or a military guy, you're just gonna blindly follow them because you like men in uniform. That's what I'm guessing.
You're close, yeah. So actually, uniform is another one of the words that they're like, why do they mention uniform so much? And it's because everybody is just into people in uniforms. They also said specifically a lot of people like sex play with Nazi uniforms, which seems like there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, me too.
Oh my god. Okay, but a boot worshipper specifically is like a masochist who's into boots. And this actually runs counter because what they explained was like it's generally a guy who's into a girl who's like doming in boots, or a guy who's into guys who are doming in boots.
So real like on the nose.
Literal bootlicking.
Yeah, real on the nose type thing.
Yeah. What does a domestic training sound like to you?
Oh, okay. Again, once real submissive, I'm talking leash type thing, like almost like in today's terms, like dog play. You get them on the leash and you train them to do whatever you want them to
like,
do.
Oh, what's the lady from Tiger King? Carol Baskin.
Carol Baskin. Exactly. Carol Baskin type stuff. You put them on the leash. You train them to be like a pet, like they're real domesticated. That's what I'm thinking from that.
Yeah, it's close. It definitely does have to do with like BDSM. But specifically, generally what it is like, it's masochism where the man dresses like a woman.
Oh my god.
And is domed by his SO or his partner. And she like acts in a more masculine, manly way and like forces him to do housework.
Well, actually, I'm way off. I would have never thought of that. All right. Well, you know.
But now you have a new thing to be interested in.
Exactly. Well, if you are a woman and you're into that, hit me up. Please.
You want to do somebody's dishes and vacuuming?
Please. It wouldn't be the first time a Mexican does a white person's dishes.
It really makes me think of just like picturing that in my head makes me think of the Queen music video for I Want to Break Free.
Exactly.
Quality. The next two, they're pretty, it's pretty obvious, but like docile versus dominant, like sub and dom. And then the last one, dog training. What do you think that is?
Oh, this is very reminiscent to the other one I had earlier. I'm thinking the same thing. You put somebody on a leash and
Carol Baskin,
you make them behave as if they're like a domesticated pet. I'm thinking the exact same thing. If I didn't get it the first time, I gotta get it the second time.
See, I wish that was the case.
Oh my god.
But unfortunately, what dog training means, and apparently it's common enough in these ads that this person's asking the question, but what dog training means in this context, according to Playboy at least, is female bestiality.
Oh, no. Okay. Just the word bestiality alone makes me not want to talk about this, but I'm so curious. What is female? Is there an opposite to like a male bestiality? What is female bestiality? Is this a guy having sex with a female animal?
No, it's women having sex with male animals.
Oh, I hate this so much. I hate this so much.
Playboy. Oh, would you like it if it was the other way around?
Yeah, 100%. I live for the other way around. Okay, no. As a young kid exploring the internet.
Oh, no.
One time I saw a woman with a horse.
Oh.
I'm not going to go into the details of how many times I've seen it. I'm just saying, one time, I saw a woman with a horse. That's all I'm going to say. And I hated it. Not because it was an act of bestiality. Just because the horse was so hung. That guy was like 14 inches.
You could never compare.
He's 14 inches.
Speaking of 14 inches, okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, now go for it. Go for it.
I mostly just want to stop talking about the subject, but another thing which they were talking about in one of the columns is John Dillinger's penis.
Who is that?
You've heard of a Dillinger gun before?
I'm not white. I'm brown. We don't know.
You don't know the names of guns?
We are brown people. We know the Tech. We know the Glock. We know the M9.
I mean, I think a Dillinger is an old type of gun. Anyway, I could be totally wrong. I don't know shit about guns. But he was basically like Bonnie and Clyde. Like, he was a old-timey crime guy. And he was, like, shot and killed, like Bonnie and Clyde. And it was a famous rumor that he was, like, totally hung. He had a 21-inch penis, according to the rumors.
I feel that. Me too.
Mm-hmm. So they dispute the rumors pretty specifically. The rumor is he had a 21-inch penis, and they keep it in a secret archive in the Smithsonian. But that's not the case, obviously. Somebody actually wrote in to say that they were there for his autopsy, and it was normal sized. And then somebody else wrote in to say that what the myth came from was actually Clyde of Bonnie and Clyde. He used to strap a shotgun to his leg so he'd be able to like pull it out really quickly if he needed to. But people who didn't know he had a shotgun strapped to the inside of his leg just thought that he was particularly hung. And then for some reason that legend just got transferred to Dillinger instead of Clyde.
There's no way that makes sense.
You wouldn't care. You wouldn't stay strapped with your shotgun.
No. There's no way that makes sense because a shotgun is, it has a very specific figure shape.
Well, but the pants were really big and baggy.
Have you seen how big a shotgun is? It's massive. It's a big shotgun, especially back in the day.
A 21-inch shotgun.
No, you're right. Because every time I wear like some tight pants, everybody thinks I have a shotgun in my pants. So. 100%. Yeah, no, I get you, Bonnie and Clyde. Me and you are the same.
Awesome. So it seems like you're now officially well-versed in swingers advertisements from the mid to late 60s.
Yeah, me and my girlfriend do it all the time.
So now we'll move on to the main article that we'll talk about today. Again, it's an article called Gut Smut, written by William Iverson. And it talks about pornography censorship and how that censorship contrast to the censorship of like violent medical media at the time.
So does that mean like giving birth or C-section stuff like that? Or?
Yeah, I mean giving birth is kind of half and half because like it is still exposing a woman, so exactly. People do have some amount of contention, but like he argues in the article, the more medical you make anything, like the more acceptable it is. So he starts out the article by talking about Shirley Temple. Do you know?
Yes, I've heard of her.
So she, of course, was a child star. And then, you know, she skyrocketed to fame during the Depression. Exactly. And was famous for the rest of her life. I don't know if she's still alive. But in this article, she's condemning some movie that has a sex scene in it. And she's like, that's so inappropriate. I can't believe we have to see that in our media.
Okay, so it was like sex scenes and... Like at this point in time, what year is this Playboy in?
68.
So it's in 68, is like, are sex scenes not like common or?
Yeah, no, not at all. And I mean, the sex scenes that they do get in movies are mostly from foreign movies because you couldn't, like, you really couldn't produce a real American movie because no one would sign off on producing it if it's going to have a sex scene. And so since they're European made sex scenes, oftentimes they're like actual.
Explicit. Real porn. Bone-to-bone type stuff.
Yeah, no sock for your penis. Like, it's actual.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, but she was condemning, like, a sex scene in the movie and talking about, you know, how bad it is that we're exposed to this media. But then in a different article in the same magazine, she goes into how she enjoys seeing surgery live. And so that's kind of what launches this author's whole critique of how we make that discrepancy. It's a little alarming to see someone's hands in a chest cavity poking around with a live human heart. If y'all want to just pause and Google a picture of open heart surgery so you kind of get the just like
I feel like this person just had a weird kink. Because there's no way that's arousing to, like, the normal human being.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't talking about it in an arousing way, but just that, like, you know, she can condemn seeing a little bit of flesh, but then seeing the inside of the flesh. The main critique here, like, a good way to think about it is why can we accept in media, especially in media at the time, you know, seeing pictures of a breast with nipples if it's a removed breast post-breast surgery? Why is that okay? But heaven forbid you show a little bit of cleavage. It's the same organ, just in a different context.
No, that's a very, very good point. I didn't even think about that. That's a very good point. If a woman would post a nipple picture on Facebook or Instagram, it would immediately get censored and that would be banned, which makes no sense because it's the anatomy of a human. That's a very good point. And
shouldn't it technically be more appeasing in general to, like, see a human body intact, like, in its natural state, than to see a dissociated breast sitting on a table?
Yeah, exactly. How else are you gonna, like, learn what the difference is? Because when you look at, like, the anatomy of a woman, it looks disgusting. It looks gross. I don't want to see that. Okay.
I'm sorry, you were saying that women are disgusting?
Women are disgusting. So are men. If you look at the anatomy of a man and a woman, they're disgusting. Anytime I see, like, the muscular system of a person, it's gross. It's so gross. It looks like if you know anime, you watch Attack on Titan. It looks like that. It looks disgusting. I don't want to see that at all. But the thing is, it's educational. And it's crazy that in 1968, somebody was making that point. And over 50 years later, it's been over 50 years, half a century, it's still a topic in conversation. It makes no sense.
Yeah, we've definitely gotten better. Like, one thing that he was saying is there was a magazine cover of either Time or Life, I don't remember which, and it was a picture of Sophia Loren, and she's beautiful, and she's curvy, and that's what we know her for. But the picture was, like, cropped mid-breast, so you can't even see anything, and her shirt was, like, had a high seam, so there's nothing going on, and they still got a bunch of reader mail about how obscene the cover was, even though it was basically just a picture of her face, because it insinuates that there's more underneath, and that they support the fact that, like, women can have bodies. But then they did do a spread on childbirth where they are showing pictures of children coming out of women's bodies, but since it's medical, they literally got less, like, I'm not gonna say hate mail, but, like, less negative opinions
of a controversy type stuff,
mm-hmm, about the childbirth spread than they did about having a woman in a bikini on the cover.
Yeah, honestly, I think, look, I'm not good with, like, history, right? But in 1968, I'm pretty sure guys were super misogynistic and...
Well, it's the women, too. I mean, exactly. The women are the ones who are policing what can be part of this media. And there's another mention of a study in this issue that is studying or, like, looking for intrinsic misogyny in both women and men. And so what they did in the study is they took two, like, papers that were written by a fake student. So it's the same paper, same writing, and they had people grade that paper, you know, based, or, like, how intelligent they think the person is, how well written, and a number of, like, other categories. And then the only thing they changed in the study was, like, one of the papers, the author's name was John something, and the other paper, the author's name was Joan something.
Okay.
And everyone rated the Joan paper as lower on intelligence, lower on, like, writing skills, and the only difference was the name. So, it, like, women were policing women. I mean, being anti-feminist is a part of all systems at the time, including women. And I think, you know, that still sort of carries over today, even though we're much better at, like, what you can represent in body image.
100%. The silver lining is that women have come a great...
Yeah, but we still haven't passed the Equal Rights Amendment, so...
No, that's good.
I mean, this whole article, like, it does have a lot to say about women's bodies specifically, but it's not just that. Like, more so than being about, like, what we're okay with women showing, rather it's what we're okay with seeing and humans in general. You know, that we put a medical tag on a set of photos or give a medical reasoning to a set of photos, and all of a sudden we're okay with seeing things that we wouldn't be okay with seeing otherwise. So another example that they explained is LBJ had gallbladder removal surgery. Mm-hmm. And leading up to the surgery, there were a ton of articles about it. It was on the nightly news every night. And they really comprehensively covered what the surgery was going to be. So they went into explicit detail about, cutting into his stomach and where they're going to go. And then after the surgery, they had extensive reports about what they found during the operation. Like, we found a polyp here, and, you know, we found a kidney stone that we decided not to remove, and another kidney stone that we wanted to remove. And they were just very explicit and very explicit about the procedure. That was all over American news leading up to the surgery and post-surgery. But there's I wouldn't say it's infamous in the grand scheme of things, but at the time, there was a picture of LBJ post-surgery, and he's, like, sitting in a lawn chair, and he has his shirt pulled up, and he's showing his surgery scar. So it's, like, his bare stomach showing his surgery scar. And everybody was so upset that that picture was out there. At least in this magazine, there were, you know, a large number of people that wrote in, like, I can't believe he'd be showing that skin, or, like, how unfortunate. Even though the past 6 months had all been about the same surgery. So just seeing it from the outside, like seeing the skin in a real context, was so much more alarming than hearing every intricate detail about the inside of the body. So, you know, why are we okay with the medical procedures of the inside of the body, but we're so not okay with the human body otherwise?
Do you think that, like, the blow lessens because it's a man that was, like, in a president on top of that, just not a man, but a president?
No, I mean, I think the blow was pretty large, like, and surprising, too. It's not like he's showing anything. It's just his stomach, his scar that people have been talking about.
And it's very medical. It's very medical, exactly.
Well, but they had a problem with it because it's, you know, it's a closed up, healed up scar. So he's just showing his regular body. He's not showing us the inside of his intestines. And they also go into explicit detail about a potential hernia that he had where, you know, the intestine, like, shoved up through another part of his... I don't want to know about that. So we're so okay with knowing and seeing explicit diagrams about the inside, but then we see the scar on the outside and, like, oh, all of a sudden it's too human. It's just people being conservative.
Exactly. It's just not wanting to see a human body for what it is. And people are really conservative and they're so stuck upon their own ideals.
And everything just is how you phrase it, right? Like, you can spin anything anyway.
Exactly.
More comparisons that they have between, you know, things we're okay with and things we're not, even though, like, it's one and the same. They're talking about, you know, pornography, like, being able to see the act of conception, theoretically. And, you know, that's obviously something that we're not okay with. And able to see the birth, which is after. And one thing that they say that puts it in perspective is they're okay with showing a picture of a puddle of semen in the magazine.
Okay.
Basically, you know, that's what these pictures of these zoomed in
gotcha
semen are. Very, it's literally just somebody's
very erotic. Yeah. whenever I open up a porn magazine, I just, where is the cum shot? Where is the cum shot? I want that.
Luckily none of these pages were stuck together, so this one's clean.
Not yet.
Oh my god. But so some of the theories that he poses for, like, why we're so gung-ho about all of this medical pornography, basically, is that, you know, as humans, our biggest fear is death, and we're macabre, whether we can help it or not, you know, all we're interested in is what could possibly go wrong with us. Mm-hmm. So we want to hear about this gallbladder surgery because we don't want that to happen to us. And we want to hear about, the process of a mastectomy because we don't want that to happen to us.
Are we looking, like, into, like, the optimistic point of view? Or
if anything, it's more fatalistic because it's okay. It's like you drive a car crash.
Gotcha.
You have to look. You don't have a choice. Like, your eyes have to look. That's what all of this is.
This is very weird. Why would you want to see it this way?
But I mean, that's the case, right? Why would you watch a video of a woman and a horse? Why wouldn't you?
Because I'm gonna get turned on. Why else would I?
Right, of course. I think ultimately, you know, the moral of the story here is like, where are we drawing the line? Where are we making those decisions? And then why are we making those decisions?
Okay, look, the way I see it is, if we can show something from a man's side, why is a woman's body censored? If you show stuff like that, I feel like younger kids will be, like, younger males, if anything, will be able to understand more about a woman's body, and they could, like, you know, just understand them more.
One thing that's really interesting to that point of, like, you know, the importance of having that exposure to understand, this is a quote from, I think, either a Time article or a Life article that this article is quoting, and it says, many American doctors are failing to spot early cancer causes because they're too shy and bashful to examine their patients closely from head to toe. So the fact that we are so anti-seeing a human body in a normal context means that these male doctors don't want to take care of their female patients the way that they should.
And I feel like a lot of it is like, it's not even that they're like, they don't want to, they don't know how to, because...
That's improprietous? Is that a word?
Look, I don't know anything about that, so I'm going to say yes, that is a word. I'm going to take your word for it. But like, it's not even that, like, they just don't know how to. I feel like half of these guys, 70% of these guys don't know where the clitoris is at. Me too. Let me know where it's at. If anybody has a map, please let me know where the clitoris is at.
We have gotten a lot better about censorship in general. You know, at the time, again, like, movies, they're not going to be produced. Like, real movies are not going to be produced if they have too much, even insinuation of sexual activities. A lot of movies with any sex scenes in it are coming in from other countries, and even then, you know, they have to pass through a censorship board before they can be aired anywhere besides, like, elite film festivals.
Exactly.
There were films at the time that, well, not popular, but, you know, there were indie,
very niche,
yeah, films at the time that were more artful sex films. But you know, obviously, we've come a long way. Like, we have a lot more access and a lot more ability to express that kind of stuff, which, if anything, you know, is helping us in general. Just to comment on that really fast, like, they also did a study that they talked about here that says the viewing of sexually arousing material tends to purge rather than create antisocial impulses.
Exactly.
I mean, I think it is good for us to have.
You get curious and you want to know what it's like. If anything, if I could recommend a movie, it would be Climax. It's a French film, and it has to do with, like a dance club, and then it just gets very erotic. But then it's also kind of like a horror movie. Climax is a great movie because the main characters and they're a woman, so you understand what it's like to be a woman in those type of situations. And I feel like it's a great movie for everybody to watch. It's very educational, very fun, very sexy if you're into that.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, now we're able to have access to media like that in which we can see if things that are within the scope of real human experiences, but maybe not something that, you know, your typical evangelical preacher wants you to see.
Exactly.
So speaking on censorship really fast. So again, there was a lot of censorship at the time, a lot more. We have made really good strides against censorship, and actually Playboy does play a pretty big part in that just culturally. But censorship at the time was pervasive, was something that people were actively fighting against and something that they're actively talking about in this magazine. So what I want to touch on real fast is how they define things which should be censored legally.
Okay,
so everything was censored. You know, obviously movies. One thing that was severely censored was books. Obviously books are a method that people have used to talk about sex since the beginning of time.
Very erotic. That was like pornography before, like, it wasn't even visual.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is, like, you know, it is a way for some people to get more in depth into 100%. Pornography.
Even still now, when people still prefer stuff like that.
You mean people read?
I mean, I don't know how to, but I know some people do.
So this particular part of the Playboy.
The niche part of Playboy.
Yes. this particular part of Playboy, they're talking about a court case in which somebody was arrested for owning books. There was nothing particularly kinky about these books. You know, at the time, people, of course, were very conservative, even when they were talking about sex, and that, you know, the missionary rate's more reasonable than anything else. But somebody had, quote, hardcore pornography, and they got arrested for having that in their possession. So the way that they define hardcore pornography, and stay with me here a minute, is...
Please, I want to hear this so bad.
Such materials include photographs, both still and motion picture, with no pretense of artistic value, graphically depicting acts of sexual intercourse, including various acts of sodomy and sadism, sometimes involving several participants and scenes of orgy-like character. They also include strips of drawings in comic book format, grossly depicting similar activities in exaggerated fashion. There are, in addition, pamphlets and booklets, sometimes with photographic illustrations, verbally describing such activities in a bizarre manner, with no attempt whatsoever to afford portrayals of character or situation, and with no pretense to literary value. All of this material cannot conceivably be characterized as embodying communication of ideas or artistic values, and violate under the First Amendment. So in order for them to ban things, right, they have to consider the First Amendment, because we do have a right to free speech. Mm-hmm. But what this judge is arguing, and therefore what's on the law books at the time in this case, is that if things are pornographic and they don't have an artistic or other value...
So like, yeah, something value to give to...
Then
yeah.
They don't deserve the First Amendment.
That is terrible.
Isn't that ridiculous?
That's very subjective. That's extremely subjective. Like, what's to say this, the person who made this law, to what they think is value, as opposed to somebody else who's just, like, looking at the art themselves.
Right. Well, I mean, so that also makes it sound like, you know, if you want to do pornography, you just have to make it seem, like, pseudo-artistic, and then you can get away with it.
Really. Yeah, but then again, the person who made that law could be like, that's not pseudo-artistic, that's just not art at all. And they could just ban the whole thing, and you'll be in trouble. I'm just saying that art is a very subjective form of entertainment.
Right, so yeah. The benefit of the doubt goes to the person. In this case, the benefit of the doubt can go to the person who is producing that pornographic material, as long as they can argue some artistic. So really, all you need is, if you want to produce porn, just put a filter on it.
Exactly. But what if the lawman says it's not artistic? Because the lawman can immediately say.
Then you get your lawyer to argue.
Exactly. And then you're in trouble.
Well, no,
you get as easy as that. You're still in trouble. You're still in trouble, though. You're still going to court, and you're still fighting this case. I don't know. I think it's a very dumb way to look at it.
I think that, you know, our right to pornography should be included in our First Amendment.
Oh, me too. Me too. Yeah. Art is art. You know, if you want to show your body out, go for it. I'm everybody's game, you know. Do what you are, your own person. Everybody should be open to whatever they want to say.
Yeah. It does come down to a matter of, like, how you're arguing it, which, you know, brings us back to the article that we talked about. It's a matter of how you're presenting it. So as long as you're spinning it the right way, I mean, everything.
That is, yeah, that's a great point. It is the matter you present it.
It's perception, it's semantics, it's the way that you're spinning it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a perception. And, I mean, you could...
You create the reality that you perceive.
We live in a society. I mean...
There are ways that you can argue sexual media into existence, especially according to this, like, judgment. You know, you can argue if it's a film in which there's a sex scene, if the theme of the film is pacifism and that's telling a socially important story, then that's something that we would want to keep in the cultural zeitgeist, and we would want to, you know, not restrict outside of the First Amendment rights. Like, it's First Amendment rights.
Exactly. You can't restrict that.
So, yeah. It's all how you spin it, you know. Is it titties that are being dissected? Is it titties on a woman? Is it you know, a culturally important pornography, or is it just smut? And so these, you know, these are the questions that people had to ask. Luckily, we don't have to do as much conniving in the way that we present our media now. It's much more accessible, and a lot of that is because of Playboy, because of Hugh Hefner's push for less censorship on sexual material, which, as we've talked about and as we've touched on, is better for people to have access to that.
No, yeah, it's crazy to me because, like, as a young kid growing up, I never thought, like, Hugh Hefner would have this much of an impact on me. I remember I had some magazines. I went to elementary school with them. I got in trouble because I pulled up with, like, 15 magazines that I stole from my cousin.
Were they Playboys?
Yeah, Playboys, yeah. I handed them out to the whole class. I was, like, in the fourth to fifth grade. I handed them out to the whole class. We all got in trouble. And it's so crazy to me that, like, something as little...
You've come full circle.
Exactly. Something as little as that would, like, make this full circle. Because if it wasn't for Hugh Hefner and Playboy, I wouldn't be at, like, this...
At my dining room table recording a podcast.
Exactly. At Sarah's dining table, speaking about somebody's clitoris. Yeah, thank you, Hugh Hefner. But that's a great point, though. That literally is a great point. Look, I'm speaking me personally. I started watching porn, like, around, what, 7th grade, 8th grade. And from there on out, I found out how to please a woman from that age. Obviously, I didn't have sex at that age, so I was too young. God. The first time I had it was, like, super old. I was like 18 the first time I had it.
That's and not super old. That's literally 1 year above the national average.
Okay, but, like, compared to the people, I had middle school girls. I'm from the hood. I had middle school girls pregnant. They were, like, in the 7th grade. I'm from the hood. It's different over there. It's different in the hood. In the hood,
you're built different.
Yeah, we're different over there. Yeah, exactly. So, and I just remember the first time I had it, like, the first time I, like, had any experience like that, I was like, I've seen this. Like, I know where I should go. I know where I should dive in first. It's like Hugh Hefner.
Thank you, Hugh
Hefner. Thank you, Hugh Hefner.
He basically created the internet.
Hey, Hugh Hefner, you made me into the sociopath that I am today. Oh, and I want to appreciate you. Hugh Hefner, you made me manipulate this woman more than anybody else. But it is true, though. Like, stuff like this, like porn like this makes you more educated on what women like and
what they're into. I mean, more than that, I mean, it opens up the conversation for you to have healthy relationships. You know, if you're not seeing other things, if you're not having other experiences, if you have to just be with the one person that you married and have terrible sex for the rest of your life with no knowledge of anything else, I mean, it really improves the quality of life to have exposure to those materials.
No, exactly. It makes you more like, expand your horizons, and I feel like with stuff like that, when you're with your partner, it's pretty easy to tell if you're not pleasing them. At least to me, it is. If you're not having a good time, then I'll switch it up and stuff like that, right?
And but do you think that's due to exposure to pornographic material?
Exactly. Because
I think it often works the opposite way too, though. I mean, you see a lot of jackrabbiting and women pretending to
that is true. Be that happy is true. About yeah. it. Putting a facade.
Yeah.
That is true. I don't know. Maybe.
Which is why I'm so good at faking
it. Exactly. It is a very, like, double-edged sword because you could easily fake it, but
it's all a performance anyway.
Yeah. Maybe, like, I will look up what a girl's into. Like, what a girl's like in bed.
And you would look it up on Yahoo Answers.
Yeah, exactly. Yahoo Answers. And they were like, not this.
Am I pregnant?
Exactly. And then my mom looked into my browser history and she beat the hell out of me.
Of course.
Exactly.
As she should.
As she should.
And I'm sure that didn't do anything bad to your sexuality and Oedipus complex at all.
No, it also made nothing to my mental health.
Right. No, I mean, obviously that's going super well for you.
Exactly. So. You remember last episode we said your therapist came from my therapist? Okay, well, my therapist killed your therapist. He's dead.
Well, see, I tried calling a therapist for a consultation
well, he's
twice
dead.
This week.
And he's dead.
Fucking answer.
Exactly, he's dead.
Speaking of how miserable your mental health is.
Let's go for it.
This is the last thing that we'll touch on. Just a cute little fun aside. So this is a quote from any time between 46 to 120 AD. So like real early on.
Okay.
And it's about depression. And so the context of this quote in the article is like, hey, we've always been depressed. It's not just in the 60s. It's not just in the 2020s.
Maybe.
I think we do get gradually more depressed as a society as we enter into late stage capitalism, but
I get that. Exist. Yeah, 100%. It does have to do with capitalism, and I feel like the reason why it has to do with capitalism is because we compare ourselves to other people. Because if I was rich, I wouldn't be depressed. I can tell you right now, I wouldn't be depressed. And it does have to do with capitalism. I wish I was rich.
We'll start a Patreon so that it doesn't have to be depressed.
If you guys want me to stop me from killing myself, please sign up to our Patreon. Please like and subscribe. Otherwise, my life is in your hands and I will kill myself.
Stop. Anyway, okay, so this is the quote from the 100s.
Okay.
When a man is depressed, every little evil is magnified by the frightening specters of his anxiety. A far worse lot is before him. He dare not employ any means of averting or remedying the evil. The physician, the consoling friend, are driven away. Asleep or awake, he is haunted. Awake, he makes no use of his reason, and asleep, he enjoys no respite from his alarms. His reason always slumbers. His fears are always awake. Nowhere can he find an escape from his imaginary terrors.
I don't know. It sounds kind of accurate. Yeah, like I'm there. That's me.
You're awake. Are you haunted?
Yes. My brain is haunted.
Have you found any escapes from your imaginary terrors?
Not even close. Not even close. I'm stuck.
Not even all the cigarettes that you've been smoking during
this
episode?
No, I've been chain smoking the cigarettes and I'm stuck. I'm stuck here. What else did you say?
That's pretty much it. But just the fact that, you know, some of those things remain consistent and that they've spanned from the year 46 to the year 2021.
But that's just like the human brain. Like, we've always been the same. I feel like humans have always been the same. I feel 100% what this person said right here. I don't even know their name. And I don't care about their name. I couldn't care less. Yeah, I could not care less about their name. But what I can tell you right now is that whatever this person said is 100% truth. And I feel everything they said.
Yeah, so we come back again to, you know, everything repeats itself. At least some of these issues that they have with censorship at the time are things that have been changed, but ultimately humans are humans.
That is very true, though. Like, humanity is a cycle, and we always come back to our roots. That is a very good point. It's kind of scary to think about that, though. It almost feels like we made no progress whatsoever.
I can't say that.
Which is the worst. Tell me it's not truth. It sounds awful. Because I feel like I've been alive for like 35 years, right? And I feel like I've made so much progress in myself. And I think about, like what you said right now, some old fella saying what I feel. And it makes me feel like I've made no progress whatsoever.
Well, we certainly haven't as a society, but at least we're making progress on censorship. I mean, I've watched an HBO series before. I would say no censorship makes for good television. Awesome. So, so for the rest of the month, we'll be covering this August 1968 issue of Playboy. They've got some interesting things to say about the draft. Interesting takes on society and things that you should be purchasing at the time. Obviously, a lot to say about women and about sexuality. So we'll cover these topics along with other topics this month. So I also have a playlist for this episode. It's called Playboy Revisited 0868. So the month and the year, August 68. It's a longer one because I could not be bothered to go through and pick the individual songs. It's just all the albums that they recommend in this issue. So definitely worth a listen. Again, 1968 is like everything from 30s music to like the beginnings of good rock. So highly recommend that exploration into history. But thank you so much for joining us today. Email playboyrevisited@gmail.com if you have any questions or comments or anything you want us to talk about.
Thank you guys so much for listening. If you made it to the end, What a trooper. Because I wouldn't be able to.
But yeah, thanks for joining us today. Come back next week. Can't wait to see you again. Bye.